In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. Last month, the U.S. Department of Justice declared COVID-19 injection mandates legal. Federal law won't prohibit public agencies and private business from requiring injections for employees based on the FDA emergency use authorization. The Department of Justice memo reads that a drug may be approved for emergency use if certain information is provided to the consumer. It includes that the right to accept or refuse doesn't stop entities from imposing mandated injections. They're calling it a vaccine. Basically, failure to comply with the employer's mandate becomes grounds for termination. As many know, this also includes forcing every civil employee in the federal government to get the injections. Putting aside the digital identification tracking from Klaus Schwab and Bill Gates, putting aside the jump in COVID positive rates of those who have taken the injections, putting aside the Great Reset agenda, and putting aside the draconian, quote, vaccine passport imposed on New Yorkers in order to participate in society, and we just for a moment focus on the legal rights of those who face termination from their job if they don't take the COVID injection. Across this country, people are facing pressure at their job to take the injections. Some states do have statutes to protect the employee to some extent. We welcome back Michigan attorney David Helm. David has challenged the constitutionality of additional lockdown measures imposed by Governor Whitmer. He joins us today. Attorney David Helm, welcome back to Another News.
Thank you for having me again.
Well, David, in our last interview, we talked about Governor Whitmer's Stay Home, Stay Safe executive order instructing people to only venture out for food, exercise, or medical reasons. It limited gatherings, travel, and required all workers who aren't, quote, necessary to sustain or protect life to stay home. In the fall of 2020, those orders were extended, and you were involved in challenging the constitutionality of that extension. Would you recap that and please let listeners know about how emergency powers were recently removed from Governor Whitmer?
Yeah, so we had originally filed a suit in April of 2020 challenging the stay-at-home orders and their constitutionality. We had challenged five specific applications of the emergency orders, one mandating staying indoors and not even going outside. The other one was allowing people to work non-essential jobs, even if it was just themselves. We had challenges to people using other private property that they own, such as second homes up north, right to access and use public waterways and land, and using of motorized boats as opposed to non-motorized boats. When we filed this, we actually received a show cause order from the court compelling the governor to appear and show cause why a preliminary injunction against her order should not be issued. Upon receiving that, she eliminated four of the specific challenges, and that was everything but the stay at home when you don't need to go to the doctor or the store type mandate. Otherwise, all the other restrictions were lifted. So we consider that a partial victory. In a subsequent lawsuit filed, there was a challenge to specifically to the governor's executive orders by the legislature with regard to, there were two statutes. One applied to more of an emergency type situation like a flood, hurricane, war, that sort of thing. And the other one applied to more health type issues. The one that applied more broadly had a 28-day limit that she could only exercise her emergency powers for 28 days The idea being that within the 28 days, the legislature could reconvene and pass additional laws and do things like that if need be. Because the governor kept declaring the emergency continuing and extinguishing her executive orders and then new ones for another 28 days, the Supreme Court found the law to be unconstitutional in that it essentially usurped the legislature. And so invalidated all of her emergency powers in October of 2020. Just recently, the legislature, through their actions, have repealed that law as well as her other emergency authority to issue any sort of temporary orders. Now, the downside is that the governor just found a workaround and used another statute authorizing the Department of Health and Human Services to issue essentially copies of her prior orders. Now, they didn't go as far as her original April 2020 orders did in that they didn't mandate any sort of stay at home, but they did mandate restrictions on business occupancy, restaurant occupancy, masks, and things like that. Those have all since been rescinded. We had some clients that we were representing that were challenging those, specifically with regard to youth athletes having to test regularly and wear masks while they're engaging in sports, as well as we represented several restaurants that were challenging the right for the Department of Health and Human Services to impose these limits on them. Those essentially made their way through the system, and then all the restrictions were released. So it's kind of a cat and mouse game. Every time we try to do something, the court system runs a little slower than the executive orders, and so things keep changing. So it's a bit of a challenge to stay on top of these things with litigation. But to the extent that they keep popping up, we keep challenging them. And now we have a new one, which is employers and government agencies essentially mandating vaccines. So that's the latest challenge now.
Attorney David Helm, you're now working with numerous clients who are under pressure by their employer to take the COVID injections. A lot of the cases have been resolved pre-litigation, as you mentioned to me in a prior phone call. Would you tell listeners, please, about the various cases you've handled and how Michigan statutes could give employees some protection?
Yes. Yeah, so when we're talking about an employee, first it's important to distinguish, are you an employee of a government or a government agency, or are you an employee of a private corporation or individual? So if you are a municipal worker of some sort, work at a school, work for a city or a county or a state or federal government, then any obligation placed on you to get the vaccine is covered under the Constitution because it's considered a state actor. Even though they're employers, it can be considered a state actor. But when we're talking about private employers, what we're really looking at is balancing the rights of the employer versus the employee. Well, Michigan has a long-held practice that it is unlawful to terminate an employee in violation of public policy. And through the last 200 years, Michigan has identified three public policy terminations that would be unlawful. The first one would be a direct violation of a statute, such as a violation of the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, which says that you can't terminate somebody because of their race, their religion, something like that. So if you fired somebody because of their race, that's a termination in violation of public policy. The second one would be terminating somebody who refused to commit a crime, such as, I always use the exaggeration of, go murder that person or you're fired. That is, trying to elicit an employee and then terminating them for failing to commit a crime. The third one is terminating an individual who has rightfully chose to exercise their statutorily protected rights. And what that means is that there has to be a statute out there that says somebody can or cannot do something, and by exercising their right under that statute, they are terminated. So in Michigan, we have a health code. One of the provisions, actually several provisions in the health code, says that an individual has the right to refuse medical treatment, vaccines, and in particularly experimental medical treatment. So if an employee was to be terminated as a result of failure to take the vaccine as mandated by their employer, there might be a cause of action as a termination in violation of public policy, because they have a right under the laws in the state of Michigan to decline to take the vaccine. Just so everyone's aware, in Michigan, there's also pending a statute, or a bill, rather, that would make it unlawful for employers to force that upon their employees. But right now, that is not law. That is just pending in the legislature, and I don't know if that'll ever get signed. But in the meantime, there is some recourse that employees can take against their employers, their private employers, with regard to this issue.
And you're handling a number of cases. Would you give us some examples of these cases? Because I think they would be very interesting to the listeners.
Yeah, so all of our cases focusing on that particular issue have all been handled pre-litigation, meaning the clients have come to me before we filed suit. We've reached out to the employers, and we've been able to resolve the issues. But there have been actually attorneys that have reached out to me because their law firm is requiring them to get vaccinated. And there's been HR directors, actually, that have been terminated because they are refusing to take the vaccine and other things like that. And all of these cases, we've been able to negotiate a resolution with the employer short of litigation. Now, there's one case right now where one employer let five. I've been contacted by one of the individuals. The problem with litigation is that it tends to be expensive. And so if there's a group of people that were laid off and they all want to go in on the litigation, it's much less expensive. So they're looking to see if the other four individuals want to go in on the litigation. So we might actually have our first case here fairly shortly that will be brought in. It'll be brought in the state court, not federal court, because we're dealing with state law, because it is a private employer. So that might go pretty soon, but once we get the other four on board, if they want to come on board, we're still going to try the pre-litigation negotiation. I always find that to be most effective, not necessarily for precedents and for everybody involved or everyone in the state, but specifically to the clients, it's most effective. So we'll see what we can do on that end. But most of the employers have recognized the issue and have made good faith offers to resolve. In fact, you know, some of them have been offered very generous severance packages, and we've been able to negotiate their exit from the company with enough money to keep them going until they find other employment. The complicated thing is always, you know, becoming adverse to your employer. Do you want to stay at that company, you know, any longer? So that's one of the big issues that we face.
Yeah, I would imagine that in particular gets quite difficult. Were you able to at least raise the idea of this shot that they're calling a vaccine is an experimental gene therapy that has not released all the information about the long-term effects? I think there was some studies and tests done in October of 2020 on one of the shots, and they're not going to release that information until 2022. But the bottom line is that it's experimental, and I think you mentioned that there's a statute that covers experimental medicine. Are you able to use that in your discussions?
So I was able to use it in our discussions. I will tell you that there was a case out there in Michigan that I was not personally involved in, but sort of ancillary involved in, and involved youth sports. And in that case, the court recognized that this was, in fact, not a vaccine. And in fact, the court continued to correct herself every time she called it a vaccine, and recognized, and everybody, the attorney general, and everybody recognized that this wasn't a vaccine. So I don't call it a vaccine. The courts have recognized it's not a vaccine. And so there is that out there as well. But the problem with the experimental side, we can use it in Michigan under the statute, but if you are trying to lodge a federal complaint under, say, the FDA hasn't approved it yet sort of argument, that I don't think is going to go very far. that was tried in Texas with the group of nurses. And the reason why that case was dismissed, I don't know if Texas has the third prong that Michigan has with regard to exercising the right under statute, but they argued the second one, which was that the employer was compelling them to basically commit a crime by subjecting themselves to experimental medication without FDA approval. And the court came back and said, well, that's really for the FDA to enforce. That's not so much for your for the plaintiffs to have a cause of action. And so with the experimental, it depends on how you use it. If we use it under the statutory authority that we have in Michigan that says that you can absolutely refuse experimental medical treatment and use that under the third prong and saying I can't be terminated because I'm exercising my right under a statute, then it's very successful. And that was argued with a lot of this pre-litigation stuff. Depending on how, like I said, if we actually go forward with any particular cases, that will be a component of it. But I don't think it will fall under the unlawful use in violation of FDA regulations or anything like that. I don't think, at least the court in Texas didn't seem to think that the plaintiffs had standing to challenge that. That would be something the FDA would have to go after and prosecute.
I take it that Texas doesn't have a statute like Michigan to protect employees.
Well, I don't think they do. Also, I just want to clarify that in Michigan, we don't have a statute that says that it's unlawful to terminate in violation of public policy. This is actually common law that's come out of the courts over the last couple hundred years. So we don't have a statute that says that. Common law says that you cannot terminate somebody in violation of public policy. Now, we rely on statutes for identifying what public policy would be, but the actual cause of action is a common law cause of action. And Texas does not have a statute that I'm aware of anyways that says that an employer can't mandate the COVID vaccine or any vaccine against on an employee.
Is that common law based in Michigan that you're referring to?
Yes, this is Michigan common law. It's been upheld many, many, many times, that exact line of questions or the exact sort of analysis in the Michigan Supreme Court. It goes back a couple hundred years. It's the oldest case that I found in Michigan. Oh, maybe not quite 200 years. 1850s or so, somewhere right around there, is where the oldest case that I found was. And then it's been adopted since then, and it's been reiterated time and time again. I think the most recent case I found was 1992, somewhere right around there, where there was an accountant or a glorified accountant that was asked to basically cook the books for his company and was terminated when he refused to. That was the cause of action then. But they reiterated the exact same thing. If somebody is refusing to exercising a right that's statutorily created, they cannot be terminated.
In our last interview, you mentioned protection or potential protection against a mandatory injection can be found in cases such as Roe v. Wade and companion cases. Would you expand on this in detail for listeners, please? I also found a case law, Jacobson v. Massachusetts in 1905, and it was a Supreme Court case in which the court upheld the authority of states to enforce compulsory vaccine laws. Can you talk about that as well?
Yeah, so let me start with the Jacobson case. The Jacobson case is way out of date. First of all, it was an isolated case. it hasn't been used as precedence for anything since. It took place in 1905. What that involved was an isolated incident of spreading of, it might have been the Spanish flu or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, smallpox maybe. It was something like that. And it was in a localized area. And then what the court had said is that because there was a tried and true tested vaccine that had been used for so long that they knew it worked, they knew what the side effects were, and it was only mandated on a very small number of people, It was recommended and overseen by medical professionals that imposed the restriction, not basically like the Department of Health and Human Services is the one that imposed it, not the governor, not the mayor, or anything like that. Very finite facts that were involved with the Jacobson case, and the court said that it upheld it. But the court also said in that very same case that if this was a vast mandate statewide, if it didn't, if it wasn't recommended by learned medical professionals, if it wasn't a tried and true tested vaccine, then we wouldn't decide this case this way. They actually say that in the case. So because we have, you know, like statewide, nationwide, you know, the idea is nationwide mandates on an experimental drug that hasn't been tested, hasn't been proven, and for all those reasons, I don't think Jacobson applies. The other issue is that since Jacobson, we have, like you mentioned, Roe v. Wade. Now, Roe v. Wade is a very blanket case. I don't think it was a good case to establish precise issues. It was a blanket case. It just said, basically, you have the right to your personhood and what happens to your personhood. After that case, it was expanded to contraceptions. It was expanded to sodomy laws in other states. It was expanded to same-sex relationships. It was expanded to all kinds of different avenues, or even personal health care. And what these expansion cases that came from Roe v. Wade essentially say is that there's a sort of a sphere of privacy around yourself, and that the government cannot intrude into that personhood without meeting some very strict standards. And that line of cases is a constitutional challenge to any sort of state or federal or local mandated vaccine. So that would be the angle of approach that I think is appropriate with something like a university, a public university that's mandating vaccines for its students or its staff, or the post office, or whatever it may be. If it's a government entity, you have a constitutional challenge. And under the Roe v. Wade line of cases, everything going from there, you have a constitutional right to your personhood and did not be invaded by the government. That's what the whole idea behind Roe v. Wade was. And so there is this long line of cases that establishes this privacy in oneself and what you can and can't do with your body that I think local governments and municipalities and states and need to look carefully at before they start imposing these things. I have litigated over that case probably more than any other case in this past year or so. So I know that case. There's also another one which involves a border. People were isolated and quarantined to a ship entering the country. But again, that was an entry thing. That was protecting the borders. And when you come to the borders of a country, they have a lot more authority to restrict people on their movements when they're entering the country. You know, I don't have a problem with the countries protecting their borders. But once you're inside, once you're a U.S. citizen, once you're inside the country, or anyone really in the country the Constitution protects, then the government has to meet certain very strict proceedings.
Right. You mentioned, okay, you said a long line of cases, and then in the past interview you said companion cases. If you could maybe mention one or two of these, I think it could be helpful for listeners maybe to write down so they know what's out there.
They're not really companion cases, but they're more of this sphere of influence type thing, where we have Griswold v. Connecticut, which is a search and seizure. We have Roe v. Wade, which is the personal liability. We have Kylo v. U.S., and we have New York Times versus the United States, which is more of a freedom of speech thing. And what I was getting at was the argument that we have all of these rights, and when they're congregated, you have this zone of influence. And so that's why I call them companion cases.
Would you talk about the Federal Department of Justice allowing mandated injections under the FDA emergency use authorization?
When you don't have a favorable position that's taken by somebody other than you in like that would have any sort of interest, it's difficult. But when we're talking about the Federal Department of Justice saying that you can, it's just another government agency saying that it's okay to violate people's rights. You know, really, that's what you're getting down to. So the federal government can be sued if they're mandating it, which they can't under the Constitution anyways. But what we're really talking about is state governments mandating it, local municipalities mandating it. The federal government can mandate it for employees and things like that. But I don't see the federal government having the authority under the Constitution to mandate it. You know, if you think back to Obamacare, one of the big issues was the mandate on Obamacare, and that was done away with. It was challenged so many different ways, and ultimately they had to, in the bill, say that it was a tax, which the federal government does have the authority to do, in order to get around what they knew was going to be the mandate issue, because the federal government doesn't have that mandate authority like that.
David, as you mentioned, protections against a mandatory shot can change depending on what state you are in. Healthcare workers in various states, including California and New Jersey, are under a mandate to get the injection. There's a case in Texas that you referenced involving, from this date now, 153 Texas hospital workers that have been fired or resigned because of the mandatory COVID experimental gene therapy policy. But what are your thoughts as millions will be forced to take the injections or lose their jobs? I'm anticipating many cases against the federal government.
So I anticipate, I would go back to the earlier comment regarding the Department of Justice. I don't believe the federal government can mandate these. Now, the Department of Justice is encouraging it, but I don't think they have the authority, the statutory authority, nor the constitutional authority to mandate anything, unless we're talking about their specific employees. With regard to the states mandating it, there's definitely, in my opinion, causes of action that could be sought. Again, under the Constitution, the right to be free from government intrusion into your body, which was established, like I said, by Roe v. Wade, there's definitely things that could be done. But it's really down to a state-level issue. If the state is mandating it, then the state could be acting in violation of the Constitution. Those would be federal lawsuits, but filed against the state. And that's different from the nurses in Texas that you had just mentioned. The nurses were suing a private employer. So we fall back to the same issue that the Constitution doesn't protect you against the private actor. There is no right to, you know, free speech on a website that's owned by a private company like Facebook because it doesn't apply. They're not a state actor unless and until court decides that they are. But if they are a private actor, you have no constitutional rights against that. So it's you have to go at the state level, not the federal level, with regard to private employers. Now, Michigan, we have some causes of action. In Texas, it sounds like they have very similar causes of action, but I don't know if they're identical. New York, don't know what the law is with regard to New York on the individual employer side, but when you have the city and the mayor mandating vaccines in order to enter a private a private business, now you have a state actor involved, and now your constitutional rights do come into play. And I would expect to see lawsuits filed in New York, even though I don't think they're going to go very far, just given the demographic makeup of the judiciary in New York. They will set the groundwork for the appeals and eventually working their way up. But I would anticipate lawsuits being filed in New York based off of that, because it's now a government-mandated action, in my opinion, violates the Constitution.
I appreciate you going into detail. Would HIPAA laws provide protection from a shot that carries an FDA emergency authorization? And in the context of the so-called vaccine passport?
So, yes, I believe that HIPAA laws would provide a protection from individuals having to release confidential medical information to private employers, to restaurants. People, I've seen people carrying around their COVID vaccine verification around their neck, almost like a dog tag. They don't have to do that under HIPAA. They're voluntarily doing it under HIPAA, but they don't have to. And so anything that requires you to release confidential medical information that's not to a medical provider or not to a court under some sort of other authorization, then, it would be absolutely, in my opinion, a violation of HIPAA. So you also have that angle as well with regard to especially the New York mandate. We haven't gotten that far in Michigan yet. Michigan, they're still using the carrot over the stick, but I definitely see a cause of action there for HIPAA.
Oh, that's interesting. You used that analogy, I guess it's called, the carrot and the stick, because recently in an interview, attorney Tom Rentz said, he mentioned a report he received from a whistleblower using the words of a Washington official, quote, "We've tried the carrot and the stick. The carrot isn't working. Now we're going to use the stick. They're coming for your freedoms."
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. Originally when it was, when this whole thing started in February of 2020, I would say, several states recommended, certain actions, and they weren't ordering it. And then in April, they ordered it. That was the stick. Imposed fines and all kinds of turmoil. And then they backed off of that just this past summer and went back to the carrot. I know in Michigan right now, they're offering people $50,000 raffles and up to $1 million raffles if you get vaccinated. So I don't know if that's going to be successful or not, if they're going to try to go back to the stick in Michigan. But it's just, I don't know, maybe it's a common term. I've just always used it. I think it's appropriate here.
I do as well. Just getting back to the HIPAA laws and the vaccine, the so-called vaccine passport, they're calling it a vaccine. I just don't think that they're allowed to do that, and it's extremely misleading to do so. And I'm astonished that mayors and governors are allowed to do this. But if this is unconstitutional to require a passport or information revealing your medical history, how is this going to play out, do you think?
So the court is going to analyze this, and essentially what's going to be is what they're going to say, what the courts are going to say, however they decide this issue. They're going to say that they're balancing the rights of individuals. They're looking at the right of the government to protect the citizens, and they're looking at the right of the individual to do what they want. They're always going to say that they're balancing the rights. And so if a judge is inclined to rule in favor of the government, they're going to say, well, protecting society outweighs the rights of the individual. And if they're inclined to rule in favor of the individual, they're going to say that those rights of the individual outrule the rights of the government. There's many ways they can get there. Strict scrutiny test. There's a bunch of tests that have been developed over the years with regard to how much deference you give to the government on certain things. I think imposing a vaccine on an individual, much like what they said in Roe v. Wade and other cases involving personal liberties in the body, is going to be a strict scrutiny test. They're going to give the state as little deference as possible and say, you're going to have to come up here with no other reason, no other way to do this but this, and you're also going to have to show that it is absolutely necessary. Now, someone, a judge can say that, and if they're inclined to say that, they're probably going to say that. But that's how it's going to be analyzed. And so when I say that challenges in New York are going to fail, I believe they will, just given that the makeup of the court is in New York, and particularly especially like Southern New York, tends to be very liberal. And so most of those cases, especially the ones in Southern New York, are going to be denied the cause of actions are going to be dismissed, and then it's going to take appeals in order to get something really to happen in New York, anyways.
Yes, this is going to be really interesting the way it plays out, but in a way it seems very desperate right now to impose something that's really unconstitutional onto a large population. And this in and of itself appears to be another experiment, and they're seeing how people are going to respond. And my thinking is not very many people had taken the shots, and these are alternative plays that they're using to get more people to take this shot.
Well, if I could take my lawyer hat off and maybe put my political hat on for a moment, there's a saying about government that if it takes an action and it works, they were right. And if it takes an action and they were wrong, they will double down on that action to prove that they were right. And I think that's what we have going on here, that they want to really show that wearing masks, isolating people, having everyone take the vaccine was the right approach. They can't get there until everyone takes the vaccine, or at least you get over a certain number of people taking the vaccine. And so regardless of how this goes away, whether it goes away just naturally, herd immunity, they want to be able to say, look, what we did was right. And I think that's why they're pushing on this. But that's my political opinion versus anything having to do with law.
And I appreciate that analysis. I see your point. You know, and medical science is politicized. Health professionals are now afraid to speak out about adverse reactions caused by these injections because they fear being ostracized. Have you noticed that?
Have I noticed that healthcare professionals are unwilling to speak up?
And report on the adverse reactions properly.
I haven't encountered anything like that just in my experience reading, talking with people, clients and things like that. I haven't noticed people unwilling to speak up in this particular context. I will recognize that it is, much like the employer situation, it is very difficult for somebody who is in the department, in the know, in that field, to say something without them being very concerned about the repercussions. And that's just not on this particular issue. I mean, I could talk about the Department of Health and Human Services in Michigan here. I handle a lot of variety of cases involving them, and anybody who's in the know is not willing to go up against them in a variety of cases, not this particular one, just because they're concerned, and probably rightfully so, about the backlash. So I believe that's very possible. I just haven't experienced it with particularly with COVID. Here's the thing. Getting the shot, wearing masks, deciding to isolate yourself, deciding to, you know, maybe isolate your children for whatever purpose. All of that, I believe, is an individual choice and should not be mandated. I have heard from people, in fact, just a gentleman the other day that I happened to be golfing with. He was talking about the getting the shot, and he said, I remember when I was in the Army and we went overseas and they shot us up with all kinds of stuff and we didn't know what the hell it was, and you read the side effects on all these medications that you take, and, you know, you could die from anything that you take. So for me, I didn't care. I got it. That's a personal choice, and I have no problem with that. What I do have a problem with is the state or anyone else mandating it, because this should be a personal decision. And I find it, without going on a rampage a little bit, I find it a little ironic that the same people that will champion the shot and champion the mandate of it are also those same people that say, we don't want the government in our uteruses. We don't want the government telling us what we can and cannot do with our children. We don't want, you know, the government to take away our children, you know, when there's something that's going on that might involve child protective services or something like that. And, you know, it's just, I have a problem with talking out of, I guess, both sides of your mouth. Either the government has the right and can interfere with someone's personal choice, or they can't. It's the same argument that was made years ago. We had our famous Dr. Jack Kevorkian here, you know, with the assisted suicide. People who were terminally ill and on their deathbed wanted to just go out peacefully rather than struggling through an illness. It's the same argument being made there. People have and should have the right to choose what's done with their body, what's being injected in their body. Under Michigan law right now, parents can refuse vaccines for public schools. If you go to public school, there's a law that says the child has to be vaccinated for X, Y, and Z, you know, chickenpox, mumps, measles, that sort of stuff. But you can exclude your child from that, not just because of religious grounds, but just because you are a conscientious objector to that particular medication. So under that law, now that law specifically applies to children going to school. It doesn't apply to the general public. So that's why I didn't use it in the analysis with regard to employers. But under that law, you can't mandate that a child will have to receive a vaccine to go back to public school unless they revise that law. But it should be up to individual choices. And I just, the problem I'm having is the same people that will champion that law also say that you must get the COVID shot. And so that's just one of my biggest frustrations with this whole process.
Oh, that's fascinating, David. I want to make sure I understand this correctly. You're saying that children who are under pressure to take to receive the injections, they could be conscientious objectors?
Yeah, the parents can file an affidavit that they're conscientious objecting to the vaccine, and therefore their children can attend school, public schools, K through 12, in Michigan without actually being vaccinated against mumps and measles and polio or whatever other vaccine, you know, your booster shots that the kids get regularly. Parents can opt out of that, and their kids can still go to public schools under this law. And it doesn't specifically mention any particular vaccine. It's just vaccines in general. Under that law, Michigan can't make it, or a school board or a county or Department of Health and Human Services can't make it required that a child get the vaccines or the COVID shot in order to attend K through 12 public schooling, unless they change the law, which I don't think is going to happen right now.
Okay, thanks for clearing that up. So this is only in Michigan. I would imagine that's not the only state, but you'd have to check your own state to find out.
Yes, and I am almost positive that there are a ton of websites, anti-vaccine websites out there. Before COVID, there was a huge push to get children vaccinated that weren't vaccinated in this country. And there was a big pushback, and there still is a substantial portion of the population that is, they're called anti-vaxxers. I don't know if that's derogatory or not, so don't get offended if it is. They have a huge following. They're very, I would say, vocal people. In fact, I've handled some litigation that involved some anti-vaxxers and things like that. So I'm sure there are websites out there dedicated to your particular state with regard to the vaccine laws, particularly with children going to school. Again, Michigan only has a law like that specifically for children going to school. I mean, we have a law that says you can refuse, as an individual, you can refuse medical treatment and experimental medical treatment and things like that. But with regard to vaccines, we have a specific law with regard to children going to public schools.
David Helm, thank you for having the courage and the backbone to stand up to Governor Whitmer's overreaching of executive powers, and also for helping clients who are backed into a corner by certain policy mandates. What have we not covered that you would like listeners to know or you want to emphasize?
Well, the one thing I would emphasize is that I am a Michigan attorney, and I know Michigan law. To the extent that I know laws about that exist in other states, such as Texas and things like that, they're very ancillary. So I would always encourage people to reach out to an attorney in their state, because I do not know the laws in their state. Specifically with regard to Texas, I know what the lawsuit alleged. I don't know if they have something that protects them. I would also say that there are thousands of laws out there, and there are very nuanced laws. Like I brought up the fact that Michigan has an anti-vaccine statute with regard to school-age children going to school. The there are probably laws out there that might protect you when it comes to this, and it's just a matter of digging and looking for them. It's not stuff that we use every day. So stay vigilant, do your research, and contact an attorney in your state because it could be vastly different than Michigan.
Would you want listeners to contact your office if they have any questions?
Sure. Yeah, that's not a problem at all. Listeners can call my office, area code 248-679-8804. And, yeah, if you have any questions or concerns or, I guess, hate mail, gotten some of those in the past. maybe don't call with the hate. But if you have any questions or concerns, and hopefully I can answer them. Again, I'm licensed in Michigan, and I don't know the law in all the states. But, yeah, feel free to call.
Attorney David Helm, thank you again for being on In Other News.
Thank you for having me, and hopefully you'll invite me back again.
I want to go over a related article that was sent to me by a listener titled COVID-19 deaths are on the rise, and official data show 87% of the people who have died were vaccinated or had taken the shot. This is on the Daily Exposé, July 29th, 2021. And it reads, alleged COVID-19 deaths are on the rise again in the United Kingdom, with both England and Scotland seeing significant rises since the end of June, and we can exclusively reveal that the vast majority of people allegedly dying of COVID-19 have been vaccinated against it. Public Health Scotland has released a weekly report on COVID-19 stats covering data on testing, vaccinations, hospitalizations, and deaths. We've been studying the reports by the week, and recently told you how the report released on the 23rd of June announced that 5,522 people have died within 28 days of having a COVID-19 vaccine in Scotland. A few weeks ago, we noticed that Public Health Scotland was being very clever with the way they were presenting the data in what seems to be an attempt to hide a shocking statistic in regard to COVID-19 deaths and the COVID-19 vaccine. Unfortunately for Public Health Scotland, they weren't clever enough, as their latest report has allowed us to uncover the shocking statistic that they were attempting to hide. The data on both cases and hospitalizations has been presented with a total for each week within the last 4 weeks prior to the date of the report. For instance, Table 15 of their 28 July report on the number of alleged COVID-19 positive cases is presented as follows. The above clearly shows that the majority of positive cases of COVID-19 between the 26th of June and the 23rd of July have been people who weren't vaccinated, accounting for 57% of all cases. However, in the most recent week between the 17th of July and the 23rd of July, we can see that the tables have turned, and those who've had the COVID-19 vaccine account for 52% of positive cases. Table 16 of the report is also presented in the same fashion, showing weekly totals within the past 4 weeks on the number of COVID-19 related hospital admissions. Because it's the UK, I think that a lot of them are using the Johnson & Johnson and the AstraZeneca. I could be wrong, but I think they mainly use those. From the 26th of June to the 23rd of July 2021, PHS, Public Health Scotland, claimed that 38,067 positive cases of COVID-19 were confirmed in the unvaccinated population. However, within the same time frame, just 15,485 positive cases of COVID-19 were confirmed in the fully vaccinated population. However, of the unvaccinated population, 863 people have been hospitalized in the same time frame, whereas of the fully vaccinated population, 763 people have been hospitalized in the same time frame. This means that 2.3% of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the unvaccinated population have resulted in hospitalization, whereas 5% of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the fully vaccinated population have resulted in hospitalization. There is a slight flaw to this analysis in respect of there will be a lag between a confirmed case and hospitalization. But even so, this clearly shows that the jabs are not quite doing what they claim to do. And the article continues further and wraps up. This means that people who've been vaccinated against COVID-19 account for 87% of the deaths in the third wave of deaths in Scotland that have just begun. The fully vaccinated account for 74% of the deaths that have only just begun to occur again. Those who'd had a single dose account for 13% of the deaths, and the unvaccinated account for just 13% of the deaths. This is despite the fact that the fully vaccinated account for just 23% of the cases seen in the previous 4 weeks. By unpicking the data that Public Health Scotland cleverly attempted to hide, we have proven that you are more likely to be hospitalized and more likely to die if you are infected with COVID-19 after being vaccinated. Antibody-dependent enhancement occurs when the antibodies generated during an immune response recognize and bind to a pathogen, but they are unable to prevent infection. Instead, these antibodies act as a Trojan horse, allowing the pathogen to get into cells and exacerbate the immune response. We were warned this is what the COVID-19 vaccines would cause based on the evidence produced in previous decades. The data we've just uncovered shows that the public should have heeded those warnings. Most listeners are never going to see this article. I'll put a link on my page, inothernewsradio.com, if you want to look at this and research further and read the comments. I just think it's important that we share as much information right now in this particular age of censorship and as our freedoms are quickly being erased. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.